now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the Que Golazo podcast. We have a lot to talk about. The Gold Cup semifinals, we're going off. All right, everybody, welcome in. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Heath Pierce, two former U.S. internationals. And we're excited to talk about both of these semifinals, the U.S. beating Qatar 1-0, a lot to get into there, as well as Mexico somehow finding a way to beat Canada 2-1 with a little help from some CONCACAF refereeing. We just like to call it, that's just what CONCACAF looks like, right, Heath Pierce?
You got CONCACAF, Canada.
So I don't know which game you want to dive into first. I guess let's just start with what happened chronologically. We'll go U.S. Qatar. Now, this was another 1-0 result, three consecutive 1-0 wins for the U.S. And in each game, I feel like they figured out how to get a win when maybe they didn't necessarily deserve it outright. Maybe a draw would have been the fair result in all three of these games. But there is something to be said for a team figuring out a way to survive, to outlasting, to watching someone take the worst Panenka penalty I've ever seen and somehow come out on the other side of it with a victory. What did you think about this game? Let's get your initial thoughts.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to start with saying that Qatar are a well-oiled machine. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Their build-up play, you know, and we've talked about this the entire tournament of just how most of these players play together in a club. This team spends a lot of time together. This is obviously one of their few, or if not their only, official competition before a World Cup. I don't think their World Cup quality when they're playing against A teams elsewhere, this is the bulk of their squad. But for this level, for the B teams and many of the B teams that came here, they've competed and they've done well and they played an attractive style. Like, they're actually fun to watch. And they had the U.S. pinned back for a number of situations and minutes throughout the game. So I have nothing but respect for them, a newfound respect. I've always, you know, I spend usually Christmas or so in the Middle East for a few weeks, and I get to watch a lot of those international games that take place during that period and other club teams that play in the region. And I've always had a respect for the style of play because they're just very inspired by the beautiful styles of the game. So I really enjoyed watching them play. And quite frankly, the U.S. was in big trouble. And I'm also going to say that I'm not sure it was a Panenka. It just looked like maybe he was clipping it high and middle. Like, he didn't have the same strike that he did before. He was also waiting a little bit long. But yeah, regardless, let's switch over to the U.S. I'll give you my initial thoughts on the U.S.
Do it.
They made a final, right? And I think that's the most important thing here. And each game that went on, we've continued to look at them and go, is this the game they're going to arrive? Is this the game they're going to have the rhythm? Is this the game that they're going to, you know, play this team off the pitch or just dominate in a way that you go, this is the U.S. This is the quality of players. This is our golden generation. That's not even our best players and blah, 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 blah. And all the things we're just waiting on our breaths to be able to say, and it didn't come. But I thought the effort was really good. I thought the response was really good. From the team. I think we still continued to struggle to find a rhythm. I thought this was actually the first game that I thought Sands struggled a little bit defensively. And he's been one of my bright spots for this tournament. There were times that he was still good on the ball. I thought his passing was really strong, but defensively he looked a little bit exposed, a little bit out of sorts when he had to play against far better opponents and attackers that can beat you one-on-one. Qatar's movement off the ball, creating 2v1s in certain situations, just creating those quick little moments where it's 1, 2, 3 passes and they're out. And then he's going, oh my gosh, this is a lot faster than we've had to face so far. So overall, I have a huge respect for getting to a final because I know what it's like to have to grind through results. You know what that's like to have to grind through results sometimes when it's not pretty. But at the same time, I'm still left with the same concerns going into a final against the Mexico team that we'll talk about that I don't think had their best night either and also found a way to get to a final on not having a great night, but also have a number of these players that can and will punish you if you give them some of the half chances that I think Qatar could have finished.
With regard to Qatar, first and foremost, well played to them throughout this tournament. I think they opened everybody's eyes in terms of what they're capable of. But I do want to say something about Felix Sanchez, their manager, who he subbed off Afif, number 11, who I think is their most influential player, in the 73rd, 74th minute. And he was pissed. And he rightfully should have been pissed, because once he went off, we were in complete control of that game. Now, consequently, or at the same time, we made a lot of subs that ultimately, I think, you know, tilted in our direction, and that helped out a lot. And I actually have a question for you with regard to Matthew Hoppe and his interaction with Greg Berhalter as he was walking off. But before we get there, I do want to talk about the U.S. And when I think about their start of this tournament, and when I get on soccer Twitter, which makes me laugh for the most part, it's just so like the safest place on the internet
is soccer Twitter during any national team game.
It's unreal. It is unreal. But I came into this tournament with zero expectations for this team. In my book, they had everything to gain. I want to see what these players can do. I want to see how they perform. And it's just bitching after bitching after bitching when you go online and you see this. Oh, the geese guys can't do this and they can't do that. I'm like, dude, just relax. Let these guys figure it out. This is an incredible opportunity for us to really find out whether these guys can help us when it matters or not. Now, I think the Gold Cup matters, but for those that don't, well, then maybe you think World Cup qualifying and the World Cup matters. Of course you do. So we have to figure out which players can help. It's the same thing with the January camp. Everybody complains, oh, it's Camp Cupcake. I hate when they call it Camp Cupcake, by the way.
Did you name it that? Who calls it that?
No, I do not name it that, but I have the biggest beef with it, because that was my opportunity to be around the coaching staff for 3 weeks and try to win them over. Without Camp Cupcake, I never would have been in that position to even get a sniff. If you get called in during an international break and you've got 3 days to win a coaching staff over, when nobody's going to be pushing it during training because you want to be save all your energy for games, you got no chance to make the team. So these opportunities, and I think the January camp is very unique and we should take advantage of it. And I think we have in a lot of different ways. But this Gold Cup is huge, especially because our younger players missed out on the Olympics. So we have this incredible opportunity, and all the naysayers and negativity. I'm like, dude, you guys, there's so much positivity here and silver linings about this James Sands, for example. You can tell I'm hot about this. Okay, he has actually maybe gotten a little worse as the tournament's gone on. That's something to keep in mind, right? He's not as sharp. He's getting found out. Teams are maybe starting to target him a little bit and run right at him and trying to identify his weakness. How would we know that if we ever didn't get to see him in 5 consecutive games? So these are really important things of note that not only we can see, but also the coaching staff as they try to evaluate who our best 23 are heading into a World Cup and into World Cup qualifying. That's all I'm going to say. I will think Kellen Acosta was fantastic again. I thought the subs were spot on. I thought they came on and did their job. It makes me wonder if you start them, and we'll get into that. We're obviously going to have a big preview for the final as well. So maybe we don't tiptoe into those waters too much, but I did want to just say that I think that quality of still figuring out how to win games is really important. We're still figuring that out, even though we're waiting until it gets later and later in games to do it, but we still haven't given up a goal on the run of play. And that is a tremendous feat. And I think when I think about the players overall, I think Matt Turner stood out. I think Kellen Acosta has really taken some big steps over these last couple of games. And I got to give a shout out to our super subs, because I thought they were very, very good. And I assume that role will probably continue for them in the final, but they could warrant a start for sure.
Yeah, I would say the super subs were the answer to all of the problems that I saw. I thought it was a little bit late for some of them to come on, but regardless, they were the ones that changed the whole game for me. Obviously, Matt Turner kept them in the game, made some huge saves. Yeah. I think he is for sure making an argument to be in the best three, if not the potential starter of this national team, because he's a playmaker and he wins games for the team. And you can tell he's willing to stay dialed into these moments and say, it's not going to be because of me that we don't stay in this. And I think that's a type of trait that builds so much trust with the back line of being like, that one time that we're going to get pulled apart, you're going to have to be big. And if you're that guy that usually falls asleep during those moments, and there are so many goalkeepers out there that are incredible, but they fall asleep at that one moment that you really need them to make that play. He seems to be up for the task, and the pressure's on him right now to keep his team in games, who haven't played particularly well throughout the tournament. There's not been one single game in this tournament that I thought, wow, that's the U.S. that we want to see. And obviously they're a work in progress, right? And you're just like you're talking about Camp Cupcake, this is an opportunity for them to have a long stretch of games. The players are balancing their own benefit of like trying to prove themselves, the team trying to get results, but overwhelmingly the players have been on social media already and they're all excited, right? You think about what it's like for you when you reach a final of any major tournament. you're not thinking like, man, we're sure lucky to be here. We should be thinking. You're like, no, it's a step. It's a step forward. Mm-hmm. You set the goals at the beginning of the tournament. Maybe they said semifinal, or maybe they said reach a final and see what happens. Or maybe they say win the final is the goal. But each step along the way, you don't stop to really look back. You don't let any of these distractions inside to say like, man, you know, I don't know how we're doing this, but we're going to keep on doing it. You just keep on like step forward, step forward, step forward. And I think that builds an ultimate trust and a belief that you can win ugly, that if it's not going to go your way, that you're willing to embrace that and embrace the chaos. The one thing I will say from both of the games today, from the semifinal matchup, was that there was a fight mm-hmm. from all four teams that you could tell this was a semifinal. You could tell that nobody wanted to lose to the other team. There was scraps. There was sort of like what felt like potential for bench clearing fights. And there was just that energy and that tension in the air, especially with the U.S. and Qatar in a lot of moments, you know, getting in each other's faces, Kellen Acosta just stirring that pot all game long. And that's that fight that you want to see at a minimum, right? And we know what that's like in front of fans. That's the bare minimum. That's the bar alone mm-hmm. that you can mm-hmm. win most fans in most sports over, which is just put in that shift, show that fight, represent the crest, be prideful of all that. We don't need you to have your best game every single game. But if that's the way that you represent this country, that's the way that you represent this crest when you step on the field, we can deal with flaws. We can deal with all that. And I think that was a mentality from the U.S. and all the teams that played today in the semifinals. That was a thing that I think really stood out to me.
Yeah, I do want to give a shout out to Kellen Acosta for his antics or his theatrics to kind of ice the penalty kick taker for Qatar by just...
Was it a penalty?
Yeah, it was a penalty. Yeah, for me, it was a penalty.
I don't think so.
He didn't get the ball, man. He didn't have...
He touched the ball. He touched the ball. He got a lot of body, but from the angles that I saw, there is a touch on the ball and even the slightest touch on the ball, and then he clears them, and I'm just like, but that's ball. That's ball to me. That's enough ball.
I saw one angle where it maybe looked like he touched the ball, but the other ones didn't make it so...
Yeah, it was only one angle that I could see, but every time I saw that angle again, it looked like he touched the ball. But either way, it's a lesson learned in those situations to stick your leg out.
Yeah, for me, I was actually curious as to why James Sands dropped so deep before he confronted him. Like I know there's some momentum when you're running at somebody, it makes it a little bit easier to dance around you because you can't really commit in the same way. But I just thought he could have maybe taken a step or two higher, which then, you know, obviously could have maybe gotten a little bit more support and quicker from Shaq Moore, who was coming in on the other side, and just had to keep him pushing off to his weak foot, you know, pushing away from goal. This is me nitpicking.
Yeah, but you know what? Interestingly enough, the thing that I found about James Sands' game today is how far he was dropping off of things.
Yeah.
He kept dropping back into his own box before reinitiating pressure or right. certain situations. And I was like, this doesn't look like him. He keeps coming so deep defensively before he starts to step back out again. And I was like, is he?
Well, Miles Robinson did it too on the one where the Matt Turner great save off Miles Robinson was like 3 yards behind him. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because I feel like when I had played in tournaments, And this isn't isolated to me, but just using my own experience, where I feel like I got more and more confident as the tournament went along. Or as I got more and more games with Gooch or Eddie Pope, I felt more and more comfortable. And it's almost like we got more efficient and tighter at what we were doing because we were more in tune with how each mm-hmm. other moves based on the situation. And I actually feel like these center backs, it's not that it's going the opposite completely, but it's not as sharp. It's not getting stronger. At least I didn't see that today.
Well, it feels like we're getting by on athleticism, right? We're getting by on individuals making plays as opposed to the collective unit making plays. Where you know what it was like. I've played with defenders before that were heroes because they were always in the wrong position and they had to put out fires constantly, right? Mm-hmm. Where I prided myself as a defender is reading the game early enough that there was not a fire, right? You would try to move as a collective unit to be able to prevent scenarios or situations from happening. And then when you have to make a play, you make a play. But it feels like this is a result of both Robinson and Sands just being gamers, right? Being up for the task and the challenge, but the organizationally between them and the holding midfielders being able to prevent certain scenarios from happening. I think that's becoming more and more exposed as we start to play against better opponents. And I think same thing against Mexico in the final, we're going to see that. And again, we're going to do a full preview on that, but yeah, I think as a baseline, they've both been fantastic, but I think as a back line, I thought today, and I think your theme throughout the tournament of them collapsing further and further on top of each other, again, was problematic from the very start against Qatar, where they were connecting 2, 3, 4, 5 passes on top of the box and combining in 1-2s and pulling players in and out of spaces on top of our box and getting decent looks against our team that didn't look like we were comfortable stepping out or pressing, because Qatar was different than anybody that we played. You know, right. They wanted to draw you in. And as soon as you came in, it was 1-2 in and out. And that quick type of playing, they were much more clever, much more deceiving in the way that they played the game, because they play in a very creative, possession-based, attacking-oriented style of play. And I think we struggled to really find answers in real time. Obviously, you go back, you look at the tape, you say, okay, we got to prevent this, because it's similar to how Mexico is going to try to draw you in, get you to overcommit, and then boom, boom, they're out to the other side. And now all of a sudden, what was otherwise a situation that could have been prevented is now a counterattack on the wing on the other side, and now they're bombing forward. And I think Qatar exposed us in a lot of ways that I think will help to prepare us for Mexico.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Now, I just want to bring this up because I alluded to it a little bit earlier. Matthew Hoppe, he gets subbed off and he wasn't happy. And I wasn't happy either. When I saw him going off, I was like, how is he going off before Areola? How is that even possible? Because Hoppe, you know, he set up Daryl Dike, who for a tap-in ultimately wasn't like an easy tap-in per se. I mean, there's still a lot of pressure and some angles to take into consideration. But I thought Hoppe was one of our most dangerous players, if not our most dangerous player. So I can understand his frustration. But you can't, it seems like he talked back to Greg. He said something about taking him off. And there's only a few players I've ever seen that do at the national team level. And they're both named Clint Mathis and Clint Dempsey. And those guys had a few more caps when they were kind of running their mouths and had proven themselves in a World Cup. Matthew Hoppe's done neither. And his name's not Clint either. I love the passion, but there's a part of me that also, yeah, you can't do that. You know, so I'm kind of torn as to how that's going to be handled. I don't know if Greg addressed it after the game or what, but what are your thoughts on this? And I'm really curious if people want to hit us up on Twitter to let us know your thoughts about this as well.
Well, two things. I just by chance did not see that situation. So he came off the field
as he's getting subbed off. And Greg, I think, gave him the handshake, hey, good game or whatever. And Hoppe said something to him to the point like, Greg reacted not in a positive way, like almost like Greg had to defend himself as to why he was coming off.
Yeah.
And it didn't look like a positive interaction. And it just felt, I doubt he said anything positive, you know, other than like, hey, I'm going after this guy. You should have kept me on or whatever. But even then the coaches made the decision. And on top of that, the guy that came in for him set up the goal for Jossie Zardes. Yeah. So ultimately Greg got the right decision. But you can find it at some point when you can see it. I've seen it with Clint Dempsey and Clint Mathis, and it never bodes well. It's just not a good vibe. You know what I mean? Yeah. When those guys did it, I was like, oh man, you know, like we're all, you know, I don't know. I just always.
Yeah, we've seen in the modern era when this happens, a lot of managers will protect that situation and say like, yeah, of course I want my guys not to come off, you know, and I want them to be heated. I want them to be pissed off that they felt that they had something left in the tank. That's the bite and the hunger that I want from them. And I'm hoping Greg takes it that way. But when it becomes that personal something, you hope that they have some sort of rapport or they have some sort of respect. And the funny thing is about Hoppe is I could tell he's got this arrogance to him when he's on the field, his body language, his chirping on the field, when he doesn't get the ball in certain spots, you know, you see his arms and body language do a certain thing that he has certain demands probably of himself and others around him. And I was thinking about that through the tournament. It's funny that this actually happened and I'm not trying to connect the two together because I could be completely wrong and just be reading into body language. Because, you know, that type of character when harnessed right can be a really powerful thing, right? Sure. But it can also be a toxic thing into a team. And that's the coach or the manager's job to be able to manage egos, especially at this level. But it's not a good look when you're first breaking into the national team, you're in a great run of form, and somehow you've gotten into your own head to thinking that you're this indispensable piece of the equation because you've had a couple good games or you've been one of the brighter spots in the tournament so far when you've gotten your chances. And I think that's a learning point for him. Obviously, Greg Berhalter spent a lot of his time playing at Energy Cottbus, which is a former East German or formerly an East Germany club that's in a blue collar area on the far eastern border. And it's a completely different mentality. I say that because I also played in former East Germany in the north. And there was just the mentality of just that I was always perceived with and people judge me by, of just not allowing those emotions to ever come out. Right. Mm-hmm. And there were times where you just want to like go after the coach and be like, are you serious? Like I'm balling right now and you're going to take me out. Like, or you're going to take me out at halftime and humiliate me in front of all these people type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I hope that he has a mentor or somebody that can pull him aside, or Greg has the patience and time, because you know how it is. Some managers be like, all right, done. Right. I don't need to see you again. You get a player like a Clint Dempsey who that's the chip on his shoulder that you're like, okay,
of course,
just go keep doing that. You know, he's one of the few people that I saw argue with Bob Bradley and argue Bob Bradley back on his own positioning on things, because he's just like, oh, you want to do this? Let's keep on doing this. And I got nothing but time. And that rarely works out for a player, right? Like that is just not the power dynamic between a coach and a player in any sort of situation, because of the signals that it sends out to the rest of the team, right? If now Greg doesn't respond, you saw it. Obviously, people on the broadcast saw it. The players on the bench see it. The players on the field are going to hear about it. And that's going to be this thing. And you've either got to, he's going to either have to apologize or whatever's going to happen. I just hope that it's not something that it ends up being a knock on him or a long-term knock on his character because of a moment of him being, you know, obviously frustrated or feeling like, you know, he could have done more, had more to give.
Sometimes your biggest strength is also your biggest weakness. So let's end on a positive. The U.S. won, baby. We booked our ticket to the final. We're headed to Vegas with everything to play for against our biggest rival. And speaking of our biggest rival, Mexico, we're going to get into that game right after this short break.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them!
NCIS Hawaii is back. About to set it up! New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violent Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Okay, Heath Pierce. I'm Jimmy Conrad, everybody, and we just actually finished watching this game because we had to wait for it to end so we could do this recap, and I was emotional. This was an emotional game. Two penalties for Mexico, one for sure. The second one, a little suspect in my mind. It got saved, and I think ball never lies, as the phrase goes, Heath Pierce. Mm-hmm. Canada makes a save, but there's an interesting plot or storyline or narrative coming out of this where they had to stop the game because Mexican fans here in the States continue to use a slur that is unacceptable. They have been slapped on the wrist, but not really punished in the way that I think could really nip this whole thing in the bud. So what ends up happening is they stop the game around the 88th or 89th minute. And that just tacks on all this injury time. And this is really important.
Oh, Jimmy, by the way, before you say that, they have been sanctioned and have to play their first qualifiers in an empty stadium already.
But they've been doing that anyway. I don't know. I don't know. Does that make that much of a difference? Like, that might have hurt before the pandemic.
You're talking about 90,000 in Azteca? Azteca versus nothing, I think.
No, you know, it's true. It's true. But I will say that playing in front of no people has become a lot easier due to the pandemic. Like, that's something you're actually used to as a player now, which definitely was weird at the beginning, but now I feel like people are comfortable with it. Your point is valid, but still, is that really gonna, like, a qualifier in Mexico City where all these fans that are actually doing this chant, because I don't know if it happens much in Mexico, from my friends down in Mexico who go to these games, it doesn't happen down there. It only happens, mm-hmm. It only seems to happen here in the US. So it does not really impact in the fans that are actually saying it in the way that I think it would hurt the most, let's say.
Right.
So they tack on 7 extra minutes of injury time. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mexico scores in the eighth or ninth minute of extra time. Hector Herrera,
as you do.
Get CONCACAF, Canada. Canada deserved more. I was really, really, let's start with them first before we get into Mexico, and we'll try to leave all the CONCACAF-ness out of this and just talk about the teams in particular. I thought Canada were excellent. I didn't give them much of a chance. due to the fact they were missing so many of their players, so many of their key players, but they came to play. They created some great opportunities that they didn't take advantage of early on. And I can't say enough about this Canada team. I really think they've put their flag in the ground as the third best team in the region behind Mexico and the U.S.
Yeah, you've been saying that, and I wasn't fully on board. Like, in comparison to where Costa Rica is, or Honduras is, or El Salvador, or, you know, some Panama. Of the other Panama and the Caribbean nations, Trinidad and Jamaica. Like, then I'm like, okay, I get it.
Yes.
But then I get
he's there. No,
but here's my point. I got it then. But that was in comparison to where those countries were at, right? Mm-hmm. Not in comparison to where Canada is at. And this game that Canada played was a perfect example of Canada with that performance challenges anybody in CONCACAF on any day.
Yep.
For a result, home or away. That type of effort, that mentality, just that fearlessness, you know, the way that they were playing through things and out of things, and the comfort on the ball, the speed of the game, whether it was Richie Larea, you know, Hoylett was good, Tejon Buchanan, all of a sudden you got people on Twitter talking about how this guy would probably be attractive to teams in Europe, and you're like, yeah, obviously, have you not been watching soccer? Like, why is it a semifinal that now you're like, okay, yeah, he splits three Mexican defenders to draw a foul on the edge of the box that may have been a little bit inside that didn't get the call, but fantastic play. But they just rose to the challenge. And again, the storyline going in was that they were missing all the players that could get them the result that they needed, right? And ultimately they did fall short, but it wasn't because of those players missing. They had the opportunities to beat Mexico. They had opportunities to put Mexico away. Mark Anthony Kay, who's just been traded to Colorado for, you know, one of the highest allocation money trades in league history, is in the middle of playing in a tournament, gets traded, and has another fantastic game where he looks big, and you're playing against Mexican players that have huge names in our region and globally for that matter. And yeah, I can't, same thing. I'm all on board with this. Is
glad you got there, my friend. I'm glad you got there.
And I will say, I'm not even saying they're third in CONCACAF with the way that they played, right? That is a team that's going to take points from a lot of people.
Yes.
You add some, and maybe the dynamic changes and they go into a little bit, you know, maybe they lose a little bit of that blue collar mentality when they have their full team. I don't think so. I think this is the scrappy way that they're willing to play and compete for every single moment of the game and every single little space. And they clearly showed a quality that I didn't respect them for, which was, again, being able to play out of tight spaces against a press, the comfort on the ball, building up out of the back, being willing to play direct. They just had all of these different tools that they did at a very high level for the entirety of a game against a team who was playing in Houston, an all-Mexico crowd that was really crazy and really loud, and they just stood up to the challenge. And again, this is not like a pat on the head, like, oh, it would have been nice. This is an actual pure respect for the way that they approached the game and the way that they played in this tournament.
Yeah, 100%. I think also I really appreciated their grit. They never backed down from the Mexicans ever at mm-hmm. any point throughout the whole game. And really, I thought, showed some vulnerabilities in this Mexican team that I believe the U.S. can take a look at and identify as, hey, I think we could take advantage of this as well. What I found really interesting, just to get into the tactical side of the game for Mexico, was the fact that they would even consider playing a high line and inviting the goal that Tejon Buchanan scored. Why? Why even try to chance holding that really, really tight line when just drop off 3 or 4 yards? Keep them in front of you. Stack them up with your outside back. Don't let them get a run and run at you. I just thought that was pretty naive defending from Mexico. A little bit too casual and in some ways a little arrogant. Like, oh, this is Canada, you know? And what I loved about this game is that this is going to be a proper rivalry, Mexico and Canada. Now, Canada haven't beaten Mexico since 2000. So I just feel like when these two play against each other now, they've got something. There's a little beef there because mm-hmm. Canada aren't taking any more crap from Mexico. They're not going to be the whipping boy anymore. They're not going to take any of that abuse in that way. And I'm here for it. And I love it. And when those players come back, when Alfonso Davies comes back and Jonathan David come back, they're going to hear the stories about this game. Cause you know, those two players watched, yeah. They're going to hear the stories about this game. They're going to buy in. John Herdsman's done a great job with Canada, and I'm excited for the future of Canada. And I do, again, I'm going to put my flag in the ground. I think they're going to qualify for the 2022 World Cup for a number of reasons, but I think their quality was on display. With regard to Mexico, though, you know, they still have a ton of quality. They have an identity. And even though they got exposed in some ways in this one, I think they're going to tighten that up for the U.S. And I think we're going to probably see a game that is filled with a lot of fights. I think we're going to see a lot of over-enthusiasm. I guess that's a nice way of saying that it's going to get chippy. And I love chippy games. I love playing in chippy games. And I don't want to get into the preview because we'll save that one for the next pod. But what did you see from Mexico today that stood out for you, either positive or negative?
Yeah, I think negatively they were not as sharp as they usually are in possession, which gave players like Junior Hoylett and Tejan Buchanan and Jonathan Osorio and Akin Daly opportunities to create 1v1 scenarios. And I think when Hector Moreno and Carlos Salcedo and Gallardo and Rodriguez, when they start to get pulled apart and isolated, they're not great. Mexico is great when they are collective, right? Which is, you know what it's like. You beat that first guy and there's a leg coming swinging as soon as you get past him. And he's going to either go ball or body and probably both. And he's covering his teammate. And that's that sort of well-oiled machine that you get out of them to make sure that like they want you to feel like this is their house at all times. And if you're going to come into a zone, you better come hard, because if you get past one, you know, there's an army of players waiting. And I thought they were a little bit disjointed, and a lot of that was the sharpness in their passing. So I think that needs to improve. One of the things that I did like about them though, is that Mexico have always seemingly enjoyed the warm embrace of chaos, right? Look, Hector Moreno is one of the nicest people I've ever met. Him and I DM on a regular basis. We have good conversations.
That's the flex of the podcast, by the way.
Yeah, it's a little flex. You know, it's a little small flex. You know, we did some stuff back in the day when he was at Roma. He was the kindest person. I was like, very rarely, most of the time, they're like wall up on you. Jimmy, you know, you've done it for years in media. And this guy was like, I was kind of like, so should we do dinner tonight? Or like, what are we doing later? We're pretty much friends now. And I know we joke about that stuff, but very rarely do you meet somebody that you go like, okay, this guy's on my wavelength. And so, but when you see him on the field, dude, he's got no problem getting into a scrap multiple times a game with people and just disrupting the game. And that gamesmanship of like, I'm going to get under his skin and I'm just going to keep chipping away at them. And then we're going to make him chase the ball for long periods. And so that chaos seems to always pay off. And you were talking about Canada a minute ago. We're talking about this rivalry. And then I go back and I think, well, the problem here for Canada is that U.S. got away with murder against Canada in the group stages. Mm-hmm. And now Mexico's gotten away. I don't want to say that's a terrible expression. The U.S. gets away with, runs away with one that they otherwise probably should have gotten a draw out of. And then Mexico gets away with one here where I thought Canada were a team that competed and deserved to get something out of this game, even whether that was taking it to extra time and seeing what happens in penalties or even potentially winning with the chances that they have. And that's my worry with Canada again, is like for all of that fight, the two games that mattered the most were the U.S. and this one, and they fell short in both of those. And then we're all going to turn around and say, yeah, but they didn't have their team, and they're depleted, and they're defeated, and their roster is not as strong, and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, well, those are the times that this team played so well, but they didn't get anything out of it. And that's where I think Canada needs to improve. And Mexico were just like, okay, no problem. And then they have, you look at the roster, Hector Herrera, a player of the caliber that he has the ability – and the U.S. has that same quality to create magic out of nothing in the run of play or against the run of play. One ball hits it. Crepo is a little bit blinded by the shot. He hits it well, but then boom, there you are. Game over. Right. And it wasn't out of this whole like, oh, they're knocking on the door. They're building up. Something's going to happen. It was like, no. We've got players of quality that can do that for us, even when we're not having our best games. And that's, again, where, of course, Canada, we're missing those game changers. But where, again, my compliment to Mexico goes in that just like the U.S., an ability to be like, well, we're still in a final, aren't we? And aren't Canada heading home?
So I'm just going to jump in, and I appreciate those sentiments about Mexico in particular. They do have this unique quality to, even when things are chaotic, to put their foot on the ball and kind of get it all under control again. What I find interesting, though, let's dive into the CONCACAF side of things here. Because
I love when we go this route.
Eric Gutierrez should have got a red card. Referee didn't call it, or he gave a yellow, didn't give a red, didn't even go check it. If I'm not mistaken, they get into fight. There's a massive fight after Herrera scored, and the only person that comes out of it with a yellow card is Crépeau, the goalkeeper for Canada, which is crazy. There was another time where there was another fight on the sideline.
There was hands on the throat.
There was a hand on the throat.
It was there for like a minute.
I was like, what is what? Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of video evidence that these guys could have been carded or and eventually, you know, ejected from the game. And the referee didn't do anything. I don't know if there's going to be anything retroactive. Probably not, because this is the final that everybody wants. It's the final that is going to get the best ratings. There's a lot of off the field reasons why this is an important game. And so I just, it's interesting because I feel like we joke about what's happening in Colmebol Bowl with Copa America and how this refs down in Brazil this past summer are out of control. What are they even doing? You know, they're losing it. And I put out a tweet like, CONCACAF refs are shaking hands with Colmebol refs because they're on the same wavelength, baby. I don't know what's going on. This just got way out of control.
You want good engagement on the internet, go after referees from two different confederations and then bring them together with a handshake. And that's that me. Will pretty much win everybody. You know, that's sort of like the go after that. But you're right in the sense that And the reason, and I'm not supporting this whatsoever, because I fully agree with you, and I think that there should have been more implications for some of the actions, right? And that embracing of chaos is a very, very thin line between putting your team in jeopardy and just trying to disrupt a team. And there was times there, hand on the throat, things like that, that it looked like at a certain point, Hector Moreno and Marc-Anthony Kay were pulled over to, or went over to the ref from the side, and they were both kind of just like, don't do anything, you know, like everything's fine. Let's let it go. Everybody just got, you know, it was kind of like, you know, mom and dad aren't fighting. We just got a little bit frustrated, you know, type of thing. And they wanted to just let it blow over. But there's still these actions that weren't punished or even reviewed, where it's hand on the throat or like players are hitting. And there's like these types of scrap type things that you're just like, well, what is it? Are we gonna go down this route or are we not? Because you're clearly addressing something when you give Crépeau a yellow card, or you're clearly addressing the situation by feeling like you've neutralized it by an action, right? The ref has taken an action. But if you're going to take an action, then you really need to understand the complexity of the situation. And if you're going to take an action, do so fairly. And again, I think we can go back to, you know, the last decades of CONCACAF. Being CONCACAF, and that's what you'll see regularly, is that inconsistency. But again, for me, I fully agree with you, Jimmy.
It's disappointing for Canada and from their perspective, and the fact that and what I wanted to tie and put a little cherry on top of what I'd said to start this whole conversation was that because there was extra time added because of the chants that the Mexican fans were saying, they stopped it. And the only reason that they scored and had that extra time to score was because of that reason of that chance. So they got rewarded in some ways for chanting something that they were supposed to be punished for. And I just find that's as CONCACAF as it gets. So
we talk about that in the Nations League also, how you're actually rewarding good behavior, because you go down 1-0. And guess what? You just got yourself 5 more minutes at the end here to create a little momentum if something shifts. And so the only thing about that chant that I will say that was, you know, when the camera scanned the crowd of how many fans in Mexico jerseys that were El Tri fans that were looking at those crowds and screaming at them to basically
stop
STFU, you know?
Yeah.
And knowing what that meant and to see people stand up for that in real time, I think is an important just sort of thing towards progressing. Obviously you don't go to Houston again, so those people get away with doing their thing, and then that goes to help the team with added minutes. And I think that's a huge issue, but you know, starting to see people publicly stand up for it, because in Denver, again, I couldn't see the whole stadium, but I didn't see a lot of people. I saw people kind of like going like this, but other, like in this one, it looked like people were here, like willing to fight people to stop this type of thing, which I think is an important stance
needs
to be made.
Hopefully that continues.
Though it's a weak sanctioning, but I hope it.
Yes. And hopefully that'll get addressed in a more severe way moving forward if it continues. All right, Heath Pierce, that is the end of our recap. I know I've teased the preview a little bit. That'll be our next podcast. Any final thoughts for you with regard to the semifinals so far of this Gold Cup?
No, we got the final that we wanted. And I'm excited to talk about that. If, the best thing that can happen is you get US and Mexico in the same summer. And if you go back to that Nations League final, that was on Paramount Plus, it was an incredible one, right? It had all the drama that you need. And those players are going to be the same players, whether they're from Mexico or the US, reaching out to those players from the Mexican and the US team, reminding them of what that game was like and what they went through, and to not go through that themselves. And that's going to create that heated situation again, where if I would be, I'm going to say this right now, I will be fully shocked if there's not a full blown fight or brawl or bench clearing situation that happens in this upcoming final, because there is just some tension in the air that something is mounting. And yeah, I can't wait.
I'm here for it. I can't wait. And I can't wait for our preview that's dropping in the next day or two. So thank you for listening, everybody. I'm Jimmy Conrad. So on behalf of Heath Pierce and myself and Brad, our producer, and everybody at CBS Sports and Paramount Plus, we thank you for listening. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at @KGolassoPod. And of course, sign up and subscribe to all of our podcasts on every single audio platform out there. We'll see you next time. Later.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.